We were Brady Germans, and we invite His Holiness Raghunath Swami to teach us about mantra meditation, how well we can put this in our minds to finally calm it and save us from the whirlpool of this life. A little bit about His Holiness Raghunath Swami, although he needs no introduction. He is the author of two best-selling books, The Journey Home, and the very recent, The Journey Within. And he is the most beloved and respected spiritual leader, community builder, and motivational speaker. Born to an affluent Jewish American home, at the tender age of 19, he left on a perilous journey, hitchhiking across Europe, the Middle East, and finally coming to India. And the thought that drew him through this journey of perils was that if you do not have an ideal to die for, you have very little meaning to live for. Over the last 40 years, Swamiji has transformed the lives of thousands of people by inspiring them to do selfless seva for the service of God and humanity. Some of his philanthropic projects include the Bhaktivedanta Hospital in Mira Road, the Bhaktivedanta Hospital Hospice for the terminally ill in Vrindavan, and the Midday Program, which feeds 1.2 million children across the country on every school day. One of his most recent and most impactful projects is the Govardhan Eco Village, which demonstrates the importance of building sustainable rural communities in harmony with nature. And the Eco Village has won several government, industry, and international awards. And without further ado, I now invite His Holiness Raghunath Swami to give us a session on mantra meditation. Over to His Holiness.
Jananjanachalakaya chakshurun vidhanjena tasmai shri gurave namah. Nama om Vishnu padaya Krishna prasthaya bhutale srimate swami. Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Prasarine Nirvishesha Sanyavani Kripa Sindhubhya Eva Chapatithanam Bhavanibhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Sri Vasadi Gaur Bhaktavrinda. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama Hari Hari.
It's my honor and my great pleasure to be with all of you this evening. Thank you, Sharon and Jules, for your wonderful, devotional, brilliant offering to everyone here. In this world, people want to be with great people. Want to be great. But the Gita tells Yanisha Sarvabhutana that what is the daytime for the ordinary people is the sleeping time for the self-realized. And the opposite. In other words, the material conception and the spiritual conceptions we see through a different lens. What is our values? Unfortunately, in this Kali Yuga, greatness is considered how much money we have, how much power we have, how many degrees we have from college, how many achievements we have done in our society. But this has nothing to do with the soul. And because this is the standard of greatness, these types of relative matters that are based on our ahankar, our ego, there's always frustration and distress. There cannot be satisfaction of the heart. What does the great scriptures of the world and the true acharyas say is greatness? The Prabhupada quoted many verses and summarized them to say, person's greatness should be estimated by how we are able to tolerate provoking situations. That is greatness. What is a provoking situation? There are so many. Selfish lust is a provoking situation. Krishna tells in Gita, it burns like fire. It can never be satisfied, no matter how much we get. Greed is a provoking situation. Anger, envy, arrogance, illusion. In the world around us, we're provoked in so many ways. Traffic jams are provoking situations. I think some of us had that provocation recently. Sometimes what government people do are provoking situations. Sometimes what our husband or our wife or our friends or our brothers or our sisters, how they deal with us is very provoking. And they can make us very angry. They can make us hateful. It can make us selfish and passionate. In the second chapter of Gita, it is said, Matra sparshastu konte yasitos na sukadukana. Agama payanonityastams tadekshasvaparata. The non-permanent appearance of happiness and distress, honor, dishonor, pleasure, pain, success, victory, honor, dishonor. as Sharon was saying, they come and go like the winter and summer seasons. And they'll always be coming and going. It's the nature of this world. One who learns to tolerate them without being disturbed is a great person. But how to do that? In the same second chapter of Gita, Krishna tells, Apuryama nama chalapartishtam samudra-papapa prabhishanti yatvat tatvatkamayam prabhishanti sarve shashantim apnotana kama kama. The ocean is so big and so full. During the rainy season, so many hundreds of rivers are coming into the ocean, and they're miles wide. Billions of liters of water are flowing in every hour. And during the dry season, some of the rivers dry up and hardly anything trickles into the ocean. But the ocean doesn't get bigger in the rainy season, it doesn't get smaller in the dry season. Why? Because of its own fullness. The little puddle of water, you just pour some, you know, some water comes into it and it overfloods the puddle. If nothing comes into it, within a few hours it dries up because there's little substance. Similarly, when we find that fullness of satisfaction, of meaning within our own hearts, then all the provoking situations of this world don't really bother us. We can tolerate them sustainably because we're experiencing ananda. The Gita is telling us that one who finds their joy and happiness within is a person of actual intelligence. Otherwise, our minds are practically slaves of circumstances. Our happiness is completely depending on circumstances. And some circumstances we can control, but most circumstances we cannot control. And when we get in the habit of being the controller, we're actually vulnerable to the most frustration. A humble person is not really frustrated so much, because a humble person, as Sharon and Jules were saying, Sri Krishna Sharanam Mama, Krishna, I'm yours, we let go. But one who really is, due to arrogance, depending on their happiness of how we control situations, when it goes out of our control, it's really frustrating. But how do we do that? Vishaya vinivartante niraharasya dehina rasa parajamana sokyasya param drishtvani vartate. When we experience something higher, and that higher experience is within ourselves. That is the purpose of yoga. Yes, yoga helps us to become free from stress, but by leading us deeper and deeper into the truth of our love for God that's within our heart. The Atma, the soul, is compared to a lotus flower. The lotus leaf can be even the muddiest, most polluted place, but it always remains completely pure and clean. When we're connected to the Atma, the Jiva, the soul, then even the muddiest situations of this world, we're always pure. We're not affected. When we have deep compassion for others, our own problems don't really matter that much. But if we don't have that compassion for others, our own problems can be so overwhelming. They could thrust us into depression, or anger, or envy, hatred, and we can do such crazy things. That's harmful to ourselves, the environment, the world, and people. Yoga teaches us positive alternatives, how to tune in once again to the real happiness that's within us, how to harmonize the body and the mind with the jiva, the soul. And jiva mukti is when the soul harmonizes with God, with Krishna, the Supreme, the Paramatma, the Supreme Soul. And through that, we learn to harmonize with all other living beings who are eternal souls and with the environment. All the true great yoga masters over the millenniums, we're simply leading us to the self-realization. Having a healthy body is nice, but in a few years it's going to get old and it's going to become decrepit no matter how much asanas we do, and we're going to die. And they're going to put us on... I was recently in New York, and a very prominent doctor from India, he said, I grew up with a saying that whether you're a billionaire or whether you're living in the streets, when they put your body on a funeral pyre, they wrap you in sheets, and those sheets don't have pockets. Death is an equalizer. It's the ashes of a rich man or a poor man, a male or a female. Whatever our complexion, whatever our nationality, whatever our species, the ashes are the same. And it's coming real soon. So what really is the purpose of yoga? Yes, we want a strong physical body and a healthy life, and we want a clear mind. But the great sages and yogis and rishis, they're leading us to something beyond a little ash of time for that. They're leading us to mukti, liberation. Liberation from suffering from ever. And in the Vaishnava tradition, that liberation of suffering forever is just the start. Far greater, far more satisfying than shanti, peace, is prema, or love. Divine love, eternal love, ever-increasing love. That's what Bhagavad Gita is teaching. That's what Srimad Bhagavatam is teaching. That is what we are meant to be. Connected to that love that's within us, that is forever. And is forever, ever increasing. Krishna means the all-attractive one, who is the supreme, ultimate object of everyone's love, and he has many names in different traditions. To connect with that love, the unlimited love that Bhagavan has for us, and to be an instrument of that love in everything we do. That's compassion. That's our potential. That's what every true yogi, sage, rishi, and acharya has been leading us toward through the process of yoga. It may be gradual, it may be more direct, but according to who we are and what our conditionings, our samskaras, we're being led toward the most wonderful spiritual experience. Mantra comes from the Sanskrit word man, which means mind, and trayate, which means to deliver. To deliver the mind from the stresses, the anxieties, which are all born from illusions. If we don't become liberated from the illusion, our stresses and anxieties are imminent. Even if we become peaceful for a moment, they're going to keep coming back, these stresses and anxieties, unless we go to the root cause, the illusion. And when that illusion is removed, then we wake up to our true nature. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he used to sing a beautiful song before his kirtan. Jeev jago, goda chandra pole, kota nidra jayo maya pisa chirakole. Wake up, sleeping souls, wake up. The mantra is meant simply to wake us up. We're spiritually asleep. We've forgotten our real potential, who we are, what real happiness is, and where it is. The mantra invokes the awakening of the soul. Srila Prabhupada gave a beautiful analogy. If I can tell a little story. Sometimes we take analogies more seriously when we remember them in provoking situations. So I was in a place in Bengal called Mayapur. It's in the nine islands of Navadweep. And I was just at an international meeting. And these meetings are more managerial, administrative kind of meetings, and that's not really my nature, so it's very provoking and stressful, so I try to find that ocean in me during those meetings. I chant a lot of mantras, actually. But I came out of the meeting, it was kind of nighttime. And I just wanted to rest and chant. And I get, somebody comes running into my room with a cell phone. And they say, there's somebody who wants to talk to you from New York. Said, okay. It's the senior editor-in-chief of Penguin Books. And she said to me, I read your book, The Journey Home, and I want you to write a book for Penguin Books. And then she said something. She said, I'm not the editor in chief of Penguin, simply to make money. I can make money anywhere. I want to educate human society and uplift their consciousness. She said there is a very serious deficiency in the mainstream bookstores of the West. There are books of traditional Christianity, Buddhism, Islam, Judaism, there is no traditional books in mainstream of the West bookstores for Hinduism. And I named a couple authors who were very famous. She said, they are not traditional, they are New Age. People need to understand the tradition of Hinduism. And she said, and I know a lot because I've studied for years, she was saying, there's a lot of different denominations and branches of Hinduism, but we have to get something pure and traditional into the main line of the American book market. She said, after reading Journey Home, I think you might be the person to do it, but I have to test you. And I'm going to test you right now. And when I give you my question, you have 2 minutes to fully answer the question. She said, I want this answer to be for a person who knows nothing about yoga, who's never met a Hare Krishna. I want you to tell, what is your philosophy? What is your teachings? What is the goal of your teachings? And how to achieve that goal? And what happens when it happens? You have 2 minutes to explain all of this to a middle-class American housewife who knows nothing about your teachings. Start now. I just came from 8 hours of meetings. I kind of, my mind turned off. I was just wanted to chant mantras. And to tell you the truth, I really couldn't care less about writing another book. It meant nothing to me. But I was just thinking, if I'm meant to do this, then God will give me words. And if I'm not meant to, then he's not going to give me any words. And right now, he's not giving me any words. So I prayed to my guru, Srila Prabhupada, if you want me to write a book like this, then please tell me what I'm supposed to tell this lady. I was saying this silently. I was taking up some time, too. But I was thinking much faster than I'm talking to you now. And I just said that little prayer. And suddenly a flash came in my mind of something I heard my Guru Maharaj say back in 1971. And I just spoke those words. Said, when a drop of water falls from a cloud, it's pure. It's transparent. But when it comes to the ground and it mixes with dirt and mixes with sewage, it loses its transparency. It becomes polluted in a sense. But if we filter the water, we bring it back to its original natural transparent quality. So similarly, original, every soul is pure. Every soul has the potential to be Satchit Ananda, eternal, full of knowledge and full of bliss. And that bliss is our love for God. And when we love God, it's like pouring water on the root of the tree. It naturally extends to every part of the tree. When we awaken our love for Krishna within ourselves, that love extends to every living being. It extends to the whole creation. That's what everybody's looking for. But somehow or other, our minds have been so polluted by lust and envy and anger and greed and arrogance and selfishness and illusion. And this chanting of mantra, this practice of bhakti, this living a life of dharma, is like the process of filtering our consciousness and bringing it back to its natural condition. And that's where our true happiness is. She immediately said, you are the one to write this book. And I was thinking, my guru should write the book because I just couldn't. quoted exactly what he said. But from that, the journey within was written. But this is the effect of a mantra. It awakens our original spiritual nature. It awakens our love. And within that prema, that love, is the highest, deepest peace. It's like an ocean that has no bottom and has no shores. It's limitless because it's God's love. This is how mantras act to rise us above provoking situations by awakening true happiness. And there are many mantras. The Vedic literatures describe. Some are hymns, some are prayers, some are just bijams, seed syllables with a divine sound vibration. And most of the great mantras of the Vedas include the holy names of God. Sri Chaitanya prayed, Nam Namakari Bahuta Nija Sarva Shaktis. There are many names of God, and therefore there are many mantras. And each of these names have contained the presence of God, the power of God's grace, the beauty of God, the sweetness of God. We can access those through these mantras. For the greatest blessing, Jeto Darpana Marjanam Bhava Mahadavagni Nirbhavanam. By chanting these mantras, we filter our consciousness, we purify it, and awaken the joy within us. And therefore, Param Vijayate Sri Krishna Sankirtanam. These mantras are the greatest benediction to all humanity. The real wealth of love, of joy, can be accessed through the chanting of these mantras, through the meditating on these mantras. In the Kali Santarana Upanishad, which was beautifully translated and published into English by His Grace Srinathji Prabhu, Keshav Prabhu's father, Krishangi's grandfather, our MC hostess, Namamrita Devi's father-in-law. There's a beautiful verse in this Upanishad. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Iti Sodashakam Nam Nam Kali Kalmasha Nashanam. It means in this age of Kali, the type of illusion, the type of forgetfulness that has engulfed human society is very severe. Not just any mantra could really have the effect of awakening that divine love in this emergency time of Kali Yuga. But there's a particular medicine, the Kali Santarana Upanishad says, that is especially powerful in this age of Kali. And that is this 32-syllable, 16-word mantra. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And therefore it is called Maha Mantra. And the great bhakti saints, they have told that this mantra includes all other mantras. We could chant many different names of God to attain perfection. Sri Chaitanya especially recommended this mantra for its effectiveness at these times. Yes, it can bring freedom from stress. It can bring reduction of anxiety. It can help us out of depression. It can give us a clear mind to do our work, to have our interrelations. If we chant it in certain ways, it can awaken various mystical, supernatural powers. But that's not the real purpose of these mantras. The real purpose is to cleanse the heart, to awaken the ecstasy of love that's within us. And whatever we do, we may be in real estate, business, hardware or software engineers, we may be yoga teachers, scientists, educators, housewives, students, we may be monks or swamis. That's all external. But through the chanting of these mantras and the awakening of our hearts, the love of our hearts, then whatever we do is not with the need of getting stuff, but the joy of giving that love through every aspect of our life. Thank you very much. Am I supposed to sing? Because this is put in front of me.
We can have some questions and answers, so can we pass around the mic very quickly? Some questions on mantra meditation, perhaps?
Swamiji, this is not on the meditation per se, but more on your journey and how you found your guru. So what made you feel that Sri Prabhupada is your guru? Were there some signals or some experiences? Because in the Hindu tradition they say, I heard one small story. There was a sage in Kanchi to whom one Mr. Paul Brunton had come from the West. So he told him, I am not your guru. You go to Ramana Maharishi and he is your chosen guru. So in that sense, did you find out that he is indeed your guru? Or how did you find out?
There's a book called The Journey Home where I...
No, so pardon me for that.
But the answer is there. It's hard to explain in a few words something that gradually was revealed over a course of years. But essentially, there is a saying that by the mercy of Krishna, one gets a guru. And by the mercy of a guru, one gets Krishna.
Perhaps if you have some copies of The Journey Home, we can make that available.
Yes. So I traveled and I met many. And many I loved dearly. And I had the utmost respect for their teachings, their compassion, their living. But somehow or other, I kept looking. And ultimately, I was praying a lot. Please show me my path and show me my guru. And without any plan of my own, I somehow landed in Vrindavan, sleeping on the bank of the Yamuna River under trees. And I never wanted to leave. It was just the most wonderful experience. I found my path in bhakti. I found my home in Vrindavan. And I was meeting so many of this great saintly gurus and devotees in Vrindavan. And after being there for about 5 months, like Srila Prabhupada came with a few of his students to visit. And there I heard him. I first met him in Mumbai. He gave great kindness to me. But I didn't accept him at that time as my guru. I accepted him as one of the many, many great enlightened sages that I was meeting. But after living in Vrindavan and being connected to Krishna, when I met him again and I experienced his compassion, it was nothing I had to figure out. My heart, and I believe it was Krishna and my heart, was clearly revealing to me that this is your guru. There was no doubts. It was nothing that I figured out. It was something that was revealed to me. But I was sincerely longing and praying for many years. And I believe it's Krishna's mercy. Does that answer your question? Still, you could read the book if you like. Should we?
Just one other very quick question.
You know, your talk was very enlightening, and
thank you very much.
And you know, thank you for it's good to be here. You know, we all work in life. Some of us, even if we get moksha from our work, we tend to get habits like birdie woosters. How do we sort of balance that with trying to get learning about inner peace? And how do we sort of what habits can we inculcate in daily life and continue to live our lives?
The motto for this Artha Forum, who has organized tonight's event, is to earn with integrity and spend with compassion. But there are so many provoking situations that are trying to divert us from earning with integrity. So many temptations. If I compromise my values, I might make more money faster. If I don't compromise my values, then I may lose so much. Temptation and fear are very strong. Therefore, a really great person is one who has integrity, who, whatever temptations or fears, embraces their sacred values and ideals in life. But how to do that? To find that ocean within our hearts. Satsang is very important. In fact, in all the different scriptures, they're all revealed in the setting of satsang. Ramayana, Lava and Kusha, who had satsang of Valmiki Muni, came back to Ayodhya and spoke Ramayana. Bhagavad Gita is a satsang, where Arjuna is asking similar question to what you're asking. Between two armies in a battlefield, Srimad Bhagavatam, Parikshit Maharaj was going to die in 7 days for sure. He was asking questions to great sages, and they all brought Shukadev Goswami to speak to all of them. Even in the Christian Bible, you know, Jesus was sitting on a mountain and he was giving satsang, teachings. And all the listeners were feeling an urgent need to understand.
Yayatamam prapadyante tamstataiva bhajamya mama vartmanu vartante manushya paritha sarvasya.
According to the sincerity of our heart, that's how we can actually receive knowledge and grace. You can't digest food unless you have hunger. So satsang is basis. Events like this evening, where we're with Sharon and with Jules, and they're teaching us so many beautiful devotional arts of yoga. Asanas, pranayam, that's leading us to something very deep and profound, to actually love all living beings, to our love for God. Well, people are coming with a common purpose, to associate with enlightened beings or to associate with people who are striving for enlightenment is satsang. And through that inspiration, sadhana, a spiritual practice. Without satsang, we don't really have that much faith or a sense of need for a spiritual practice. But the company of sadhus, various ways of life, give us an understanding of the need to have regular sadhana. Many of you are in the corporate world. But no matter how much you work, you put some time aside to eat. Yes? You could be making more money if you don't eat. You could be putting maybe 1 hour more in your business. But you won't be as effective unless you have energy. Sadhana gives us spiritual energy, spiritual nourishment. We need that in order to have that integrity and compassion and peace through the various trials of life. Arjuna fought a war, but before he fought that war, he sat for an hour or two and listened to Krishna speak Bhagavad Gita. And therefore, he fought that battle with complete integrity and values, with his mind fixed on the highest truth. So in the same way, to put some time, sacred, special time aside every day to pray, to offer puja, to chant God's names, to meditate, along with yoga practices, could be very simple, but regularly, every day, to put that sacred time. In our tradition, for about 2 hours every day, we all chant our japa, chant Krishna's names, and for another hour we have kirtan, and for another hour or two we have a class in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, and after that we take breakfast. But that's what Gauranga Prabhu does. He lives in a monastery, in an ashram. But at home, even if it's a half hour or 15 minutes or whatever it may be, to put some time aside for our sadhana. Satsang, sadhana, and then sadachar. And then with the spiritual nourishment and the clarity of thought that we get from that, we apply it to our life to actually live with integrity and work with integrity. And then seva. Then our whole life becomes compassion, to serve with compassion. So it's accessible, it's possible for everyone. It's just a matter of making that decision that this is important. Thank you very much.